Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 409, 90 degrees on this Wednesday, June 25th, 2025. Halfway through the week, we're on the downslope. It's all looking good, people. It's supposed to be cooler and cooler as we move forward. Rain's going to move in, yeah, but cooler weather. Cool things off for a chance. So, we do have those storms moving through the area. They should be, you know, hitting spotty in our area, but they will be intense. Looking at the radar, hopefully they don't increase more. But just be aware, you could get some heavy downpours in areas moving through for the next few hours. I think 3 hours is the window for the rain moving through, and then just cloudy for the evening. So, the Congressional Budget Office released a letter yesterday. On June 24th, I have it in my possession now, and I've posted it on my Facebook so you could read it there as well from you. And it's coming directly from the Congressional Budget Office, Director Philip Swaggle. Congressional Budget Office is a nonpartisan budget office that basically gives the financial implications of any legislation that goes through there. So the Congressional Budget Office just debunked Democrat fear-mongering on Medicaid. Letters there for you to read, too. Don't take my word for it. Read it with your own eyes. Share it with your friends so they can read it with their own eyes. It confirms that the Big Beautiful Bill Act only removes ineligible, illegal, and able-bodied non-workers from Medicaid. It rebukes false claims that Republicans are cutting Medicaid, projects a 30% growth in the program over the next decade, and shows billions of dollars in state savings. And you have to remember, the CBO underestimates conservative revenue gains and overestimates deficits. So the real news, it's even better than the letter states. So the letter is here, and it was addressed to the Honorable Jody Armington, Chairman of the Committee of the Budget, Committee on Budget, and the Honorable Brett Guthrie, Chairman of the Committee on Energy and Commerce. And if you read, I'll read some of it here. Dear Chairmans, you have asked the Congressional Budget Office for information concerning changes to insurance coverage that would occur under H.R. 1, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, as passed by the House of Representatives on May 22, 2025. You asked specifically about changes related to Medicaid under Title IX, Energy and Commerce. CBO estimates that enacting the Medicaid provisions in Title IX would increase the number of people without health insurance by 7.8 million in 2034, relative to baseline projections under current law. Of that number, so of the 7.8 million, about 4.8 million would be able-bodied adults between the ages of 19 and 64 who have no dependents and who do not meet the community engagement requirement in Section 44141 for participating in work-related activities at least 80 hours a month. About 1.4 million would be people who do not meet citizenship and immigration status requirements for Medicaid enrollment, but who would be covered under current law in programs funded by the states. About 2.2 million would become uninsured because of their other provisions in H.R. 1, including provisions increasing the frequency of verification of eligibility to enroll in Medicaid and those that would lead states to change their Medicaid enrollment requirements in response to federal policy changes. CBO estimates that the interactions among the policies would, on net, reduce the number of people without health insurance by 600,000 in 2034, relative to the sum of the estimated effects of the individual policies, because some people would become uninsured under more than one policy. So the breakdown is there. The letter is there for you to read. And check it out. Read it with your own eyes from the Congressional Budget Office. That being said, let's go to what I was going to talk about, because that just came across. I got it in a press release email, and I put it right out to you. So you could read that on my Facebook right now, Rob O'Donnell. That letter is posted there, so you could read it. This goes to the University of Pennsylvania, their federal research budget. Now, as I was reading this, it made me more and more uneasy. And I'm going to read you what it states, then see if you feel uneasy. Gene editing, mRNA technology for developing vaccines and cognitive behavioral therapy rank among the most recognized scientific discoveries in the past 75 years. Though separated by space and time, they all rest upon the same keystone, the University of Pennsylvania's $2 billion research and development program. Taxpayer-funded federal grants and contracts over the bulk of the price tag, including $254 million on more than 170 projects during the past 5 years alone, leaving many insiders concerned about the impact of this administration's nationwide $1.5 billion cut to academic research funding going forward. I think we're all going to feel the impacts of these cuts for a long time, said Dr. Julie Margetta Morgan, president of the progressive think tank, the Century Foundation, during the June 4th congressional hearing at Capitol Hill about tuition pricing at Ivy League universities. We're not going to be developing the drugs that make us safer and healthier in this country. We're not going to be developing the innovations that help keep us competitive in power and manufacturing within our country. So it's going to have really big impact on us as a whole. Well, not everybody agrees with that, however. Dr. J. Scott Turner, director of diversity at Sciences and Project at the National Association of Scholars, told the media that analysis of federal grant funding show that allocations have doubled in support roughly 7 years since 1950. The federal dollars began overshadowing philanthropic donations. Theoretically, Turner said, the anticipated cuts mean researchers would be working with the same level of taxpayer funding doled out in 2017, or $32.4 billion, according to the data of National Center for Science Engineering Statistics. In 2023, that number hit $49 billion, or about twice what the government spent in 2002. However, half that additional spending occurred during the last 6 years alone, in part due to the large pandemic-era stimulus under former President Joe Biden via the CHIPS and Science Act and the Inflation Reduction Act. So in the past 6 years, funding to Ivy League schools' medical research doubled because of temporary COVID-era programs. The thing that the Trump administration is doing is challenging some of the assumptions that have prevailed on how the federal government funds university science, challenging assumptions that have sort of been riding along now for 75 years, Turner said. It's time for that to happen, in my view, and I think science will be a lot healthier for it. Although more than 1,100 colleges and universities receive research and development support in 2023 under the Biden administration, just 20 of those universities account for the bulk. Three of the Commonwealth's most public-facing institutions are on that list: Penn State University, the University of Pittsburgh, and the University of Pennsylvania. The later two, at $916.7 million and $936.5 million, respectively. So the University of Pittsburgh and the University of Pennsylvania got $1 billion each of taxpayer money. But only one, UPenn, an elite private institution with a checkered history of nebulous spending that raised a specter of doubt along lawmakers, academics, and the president himself, which is his alma mater, by the way. In March, the administration froze the university funding to the tune of $175 million after it upheld a policy allowing transgender athletes to compete in women's sports. The move paused work on an untold number of research projects supporting the U.S. Department of Defense and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. However, the development alarmed the academic research community, long accustomed to an ideological and corporate pressure on its work, but frightened their continuance in these projects. If you look at the amount of money that has skyrocketed since 2020 to these universities, doubled. And then when it's obviously, abhorrently suggested that we go back to these pre-numbers, you're trying to stymie research. You're trying to do away with vaccines. You're trying to kill future generations of Americans because we can't research. I'm not sure what the University of Pennsylvania's endowment is, but I'm sure it's in the billions. Our tax dollars are going to fund their research. I would say that most people who attend the University of Pennsylvania are doing pretty well off later. And if they're alma mater, if their donors, if their corporations want to fund their research, that's fine. We fund it enough. The fact that it has doubled seven times over the past couple of decades just shows that it needs a correction. And it's on a larger scale of what we talk about with our local school districts. They got millions of dollars in extra COVID funding during those years. It's running out now. It's gone now. A lot of school districts didn't do what they said they would do with that money. They spent it on other things, but I don't know many school districts that have totally new air handlers and HVAC systems with air purification systems. That was what it was for, right? That's what it was built for. That's what they went in front of Congress and said they were going to do because we got to get kids back in school. They held our kids hostage at home while they made them watch YouTube videos to get more money from taxpayers. Promised a bill of goods that never came to fruition, hired more staff, bought more Chromebooks. Check into those contracts. Or where the Chromebooks even went in a lot of cases. But yet, when somebody says, we need to step back here. We need to go back to where life was normal again. Especially for you or I, the taxpayer. But yet they cry and scare. You don't want new drugs. You don't want to try to cure cancer. You don't want to do these things that we need to strive to do. And we can't do that without your taxpayer dollar. I bet you could. Because once you invent that drug, which our tax money spent to produce, to research, to test, you're making billions off of it. And I don't know about you, but I've never seen a residual check for that as a taxpayer. But our taxes keep going up, right? The tuition keeps going up for these schools, right? Salaries keep going up for the people involved in it. No residual checks for you or I. It's 422 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 426, 91 degrees on this Wednesday, June 25th. June is kind of cruising by, right? Next thing you know, we'll be at Scrantastic Spectacular, July 3rd, downtown Scranton. It's a good event. If you're looking for something to do that day before the long weekend, if you're still in the area, if you're not traveling, it's a big travel weekend. Or do people just take off the whole week? We'll see. I'll be here. So even the headlines are starting to change. If you look at the way the headlines were yesterday compared to today, now they're stating early U.S. intelligence reports suggest U.S. strikes only set back Iran's nuclear program by months. And that has changed now, but, you know, they want to get their narrative in because even if you read the story, it says that this is disputed by Israeli intelligence. It's disputed by more in-depth U.S. intelligence. It's disputed by Iran themselves. But the headline still looks good, right? Early U.S. intelligence reports suggest that this is not as successful of a strike as we've led it to believe. Because, you know, the administration can't have anything positive happen, even when it comes to a terrorist state who wants to kill Americans. And it's funny when I say, well, you know what? Iran's been no threat to me. Iran's really, they haven't held a gun to any American's head or threatened any American directly. What rock are you living under? I mean, truly and honestly, what rock are you living under? They have been shooting missiles at American military personnel for 2 years now. The Houthi rebels in Yemen are funded, trained, supplied by Iran. Hezbollah, trained, supplied, and given their materials from Iran. Hamas, same thing. Now, Hamas and Hezbollah really hasn't had anything to do with Americans. But I could tell you for certainty that Houthi rebels were firing at our ships a dozen to two dozen times a day. Our sons, our daughters, our husbands, our wives, fathers, mothers. And then the battle group that was there before that. Well, then the answer is, well, why is the U.S. military, why is there a carrier strike group in the Red Sea? We have no reason to be there. Well, then you'd be spending $10 more for pretty much everything you buy because 70% of the world's goods come through there. So to tell anyone that Iran hasn't been through, they haven't been trying to harm Americans, regardless of the intelligence, regardless of is this another weapons of mass destruction thing? No, I don't think so, because you have the, I read the quotes yesterday. The last five American presidents said the same thing. Iran should never be allowed to have a nuclear program. And then it morphed to, well, they can have a limited domestic program. You are the richest oil nation in the world. You do not need a nuclear program for domestic use. You surely do not need enriched uranium over 60%, which is only use is weapons grade. Therefore, it's on the table. You add that to they've been supplying training and giving intel to people who have been shooting at us for the past 2 years on a daily basis. Not for quips and giggles, but to kill Americans. So stop already. And for the people who said, again, yesterday running with the, well, early intelligence reports, you know, the leaked, unsourced, unnamed people, they, them, said that this wasn't, you know, it's just weeks or months it's going to set them back by. Really? That's why Iran agreed to a ceasefire with their mortal enemy? Because it was just a superficial strike? Come on. We know you're not that dumb. You hopefully know you're not that dumb. Stop sounding that dumb. It's 4:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. The point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice in law enforcement. On this day, we have three, June 25th. We're going to start off Patrolman Nolan Eugene Tipton, Philadelphia Police Department in 1932. He was killed when his motorcycle collided with a car at Chestnut Street and Farragut Terrace, West Philadelphia, during a chase of a robbery suspect on the evening of June 24th, 1932. Suffered a severe injury and passed the next day. Patrolman Ori N. Murray, Pittsburgh Bureau of Police, 1930, was killed in an accident on Bigelow Boulevard near Kirkpatrick Street when the automobile crossed the center line and struck his motorcycle head-on. He was transported to Mercy Hospital, where he died as a result of his injuries. And Constable Harvey Weisinger, Cambria County District Attorney's Office, 1922, was shot and killed after responding to a domestic problem at a farmhouse. A woman said her husband had forced her and their six children to sleep outside in the night before and was trying to do it again. As Constable Weisinger attempted to arrest the man, he produced a revolver and shot him. Later that night, the man's body was found in the woods near Elton, He had died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The constable was survived by his wife and six children. Again, that was 1922. And those are the three that we have listed for today, Wednesday, June 25th. And if you just peruse our newspapers, local papers, local news stations, to see what our local law enforcement is doing day in and day out, leaving their families, doing their job to protect and serve, and putting their lives on the line. And it could be something as simple as crossing the street, driving from one place to another, responding to what a lot of people would portray as routine calls. But in law enforcement, we know that the suspect, the situation always has a voice, and no call is routine. You could do something 1,000 times. All it takes is one for something to go bad. And when it goes bad, it's usually in a split second. And then those officers are made to deal with that split second. And hopefully their training, their experience, and their equipment serve them well. Because that's how thin the line is between today and tomorrow. It's 4:40 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? I did get a text message in that said, just wanted to let you know, it's 6 months until Christmas today. Start your shopping early. Happy holidays, Rob. I'm wondering if my wife sent that. If she wasn't on a road trip right now, I think she's halfway through a 1,300-mile trek today. Left first thing this morning. I believe she's just about at the – she's well past the halfway mark, but getting to the location she's going to spend the night. And then head on down to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Yep, that's me. I'm boss this weekend – this weekend. For the next week, anyway. I am dog-sitting, though. I am the proud caretaker of T-Rex, a 4-year-old German Shepherd that likes 5 people. My son, his wife, their child, myself, and my wife. So I am the proud caretaker of T-Rex, Doodle, Zor. I think he's 7 or 8. But got him too, and we got Angry Cat. I got Angry Cat, which is somewhere between 14 and 18 years old, and it's an angry cat, so it's got that angry cat look. And it's not just an angry cat. You ever see the picture of the cat that looks like Angry Cat? It has the angry face all the time. It's a very sweet cat. It's old, so it kind of just moves around very slow. But we have Angry Cat, so that's my job for the next couple of days. So if I sound a bit off, it's because I'm fur babysitting, I guess, or they're not babies anymore. Fur adult sitting. I don't know. Let's get on to history today, but it is 6 months till Christmas, so if you're looking, start now. Some historic events. 1876, the Battle of Little Bighorn, Custer's last stand. Yep, one of the most famous battles in the American Indian War took place in Montana Territory. Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer and over 200 of his men were killed by a coalition of Lakota, Northern Cheyenne, and Arapaho warriors led by Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse. A shocking defeat became the rallying point for the U.S. government to increase military action against Native tribes. 1942, Eisenhower named U.S. commander in Europe. General Dwight D. Eisenhower was appointed to commander of the U.S. forces in Europe during World War II, setting the stage for the eventual D-Day invasion and Allied victory. 1950, the Korean War began. North Korea forces crossed the 38th parallel, invading South Korea. This prompted the United Nations, led by the United States, to intervene. The conflict marked the beginning of active U.S. involvement in Cold War-era military engagements. We have some notable births today. Let's see what we have. George Michael Cohen, 1878. Composer, playwright, and entertainer, often called the father of the American musical comedy. Known for patriotic songs like You're a Grand Old Flag. Carly Simon, 1945, singer-songwriter, famous for hits like You're So Vain, part of the 70s songwriter movement. What do we have? Some other notable moments. 1997, murder conviction, the killing of Ennis Cosby. Mikhail Markusev was convicted in California of the murder of Ennis Cosby, son of entertainer Bill Cosby, a high-profile case that garnered national media attention. And in 1962, the U.S. Supreme Court rules on school prayer. In Engle v. Vitale, the Supreme Court ruled that it is unconstitutional for state officials to compose an official school prayer and encourage its recitation in public schools, reinforcing the separation of church and state. Makes sense. Doesn't mean you can't pray in school. It just means that someone can't force you to pray in school. That's the division there that we often don't get into. Let me see here. Custer rolled the dice one too many times. He did, however, distinguish himself at the Battle of Gettysburg. Great point there. It's amazing, though, and you bring up a great point here. And there's a texter who just texted that in. Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer, sometimes called General Custer, he was a lieutenant colonel, is known for his biggest defeat. That's his historic value. But if you look at the things that he did partake in, and you know, this texter nailed it on the head. Distinguished himself at the Battle of Gettysburg. It's amazing the things that history grasps onto. And it's a prime example of, you know, what stuck for him. Not his greatest accomplishments, but one of his biggest failures. So let that be a lesson to you as we look at some media headlines in today's times. And have the knowledge to get the whole picture. Do your own research, look at it. Listen, I'm just here to spark a conversation. You hear a topic I talk about. I encourage you often and always, do your own research on it. Look into that topic. Get the angle from all sides. When I bring a story to you, when I get a story that I start, I usually start 5:30 in the morning. That's when I'm up. And I usually check all the news feeds first thing and try and get my stories. I try to grab 12 to 14 stories to put a show together for you. If you notice, I don't give you the same show each hour, 3 hours in a row. I give you a full 3-hour show with different topics. But look at those from all angles. And I do. You know, I'll look at what this organization's saying. And most people, probably most people who dislike me or say they don't listen, but they listen religiously because they just want to hear how angry I make them, they'd be amazed of the news sites that I have on my iPad and on my iPhone. The New York Times, the Washington Post, Reuters, CNN, ABC, NBC, MSNBC. I want to hear what they're all saying. And I try and give you an overview so you could go out and look at it for your end. And that's why I put a lot on social media, especially, you know, documents like the letter from the Congressional Budget Office. So you could look at them and say, that's interesting, because that's how we learn. It's 4:52 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. How's everybody doing out there? The storm's getting to you? Well, I just wanted to give this next story to show what our members of our fire community, our men and women in both paid and volunteer fire service, what they put up with. We've been talking about the extreme heat. We've been talking about, how basically hot and unbearable it's been. But you know, just while we're complaining about that, shortly before 7 a.m. this morning, you have members of our fire community putting on gear that we wouldn't wear in the winter and run down the block. Putting it on, jumping in their apparatuses, and getting to a scene for a fire. Thankfully, saving someone. Kingston resident was hospitalized after being entrapped in a burning home in the borough Tuesday morning, according to the Kingston 44 Fire Departments. Fire was reported at 50.5 Payne Avenue shortly before 7 a.m., and crews arrived to find a working fire with entrapment. One victim was found in the second-floor bedroom, removed from the structure. Person was taken to Geisinger, Wyoming Valley Medical Center, to be treated for reported burn injuries. Firefighters sounded a second alarm, drawing crews and resources from surrounding departments to help douse the fire. Fire department asked members of the public to avoid the area during the operation. Heroes, each and every one of them. 7 o'clock this morning, it's probably in the 80s already, working fire. Leaving the comfort of their homes, their families, probably getting ready for work themselves, for their volunteers, agencies. Save this person's life, no doubt. Putting on gear where it's probably easy, 140 to 160 degrees inside once they get working. So my hats go off to you and today's heroes, Kingston and 44 Fire Departments, saving the individual and getting it done. Let's go to the phone. We have Joe from Edwardsville. Joe, I have 2.5 minutes.
Okay, Bob, brother, trust me, I can do this in 2.5 minutes. As far as General Custer was concerned, yes, he was a lieutenant colonel, but as based on what he did during the Civil War, he received what is known as a brevet rank, which is something you, with a military background, and all the people you know may be familiar with. Otherwise, it's also known as a battlefield promotion. He was a lieutenant colonel, and then, you know, once, you know, other officers begin to die or things go crazy and you take over and do what you need to do, you could receive from your superiors this brevet rank, or, as I say, a battlefield promotion. And then once hostilities cease, very often people are reduced back to the rank they had when such hostilities commenced. And that's what happened to Lieutenant Colonel Custer. And, okay, let's face facts, he was an egomaniac, which is, you know, probably why he received that battlefield promotion to Brigadier General. And I believe it even says that on his tombstone. Here lies Lieutenant Colonel George Custer, Brevet Brigadier General. And it's just, you know, something that I heard on Blue Bloods was one of them. You are remembered for your last worst act. And that's, quite frankly, what happened to George.
Yeah, no doubt. Those promotions are something else. I actually know a couple people who have gotten them in the past. And all the responsibility, all the headache, none of the pay.
No, none of the pay, none of the privilege, none of the nothing. But when you're desperate times call for desperate measures, and that's quite frankly exactly what happened. And so there you go. So now that we wrap that up, and I appreciate you listening to me. I just spent a minute or so talking to Jake about what Sue was talking about, the Remembrance of L.A. Tyrone. And I don't know if you ever listened to him on the radio
or whatnot. Yes.
Oh, okay, great. So you know what I'm talking about. I used to call L.A. all the time, you know, probably about as much as I call you. And,
he was one of the best.
No doubt. Indeed. A unique individual and beyond entertaining, enlightening. The whole nine yards.
All right, Joe. I appreciate you acknowledging him, and no doubt. Thanks for calling.
No worries, brother. You have a good day.
Thank you.